Welcome to Politics Unlocked, a weekly podcast where we discuss UK political news and events every Friday. This episode, however, is being released during the Christmas period, so I hope everyone is having an enjoyable break, getting a chance to at least communicate with loved ones, even if you can't see them in person, and above all, staying safe. My name is Chris Wilson, and joining me in this episode is James Clark, leader of Renew. Renew is a political party formed in the UK in 2017 by a number of then independent candidates who ran in the 2017 general election. James, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Before we begin, if you'd like to contact the podcast, you can email show@politicsunlocked.uk, or you can leave us a voicemail using the link at the end of the episode description. James, in 2019, Chris Coughlan wrote that the Renew Party was founded because breakup of our two paralysed parties of government can overcome our dysfunctional politics. However, outside of political dysfunction, the first question that a lot of people would ask when introduced to a new political party is, how are you different from those parties? And how would your policies improve my life?
Okay, that's a big one. I guess the way to frame this is to understand that Renew is not a traditional political party. Renew is a platform for change. So I think what Chris was alluding to then was that the system that led to Brexit appeared to be a broken system. You know, a parliament of people who knew that it was a bad idea somehow allowed it to happen. And then the division and the polarization that followed were just examples of a system that didn't work. And that it was becoming more and more clear that an eternity of red versus blue was in no one's best interests. And if your grandchildren had to vote for the same two dismal choices as your grandparents did, there was no reason to support this system any longer. And in the absence of, you know, third parties or smaller parties that had a real agenda for change, we felt that rather than, you know, being a campaign group or an activist group, we needed to form a political party in order to stand in elections and to offer a real alternative and to take votes away from the failing parties. So that's the sort of, sorry, a rather sort of long-winded way of putting why we did this.
That's, I think, really useful context for people to understand your position. I spoke to a Green Party councillor recently, and we discussed, I guess, the extent to which such ambitions can be realised under our current system without, for example, electoral reform and the limits of the first past the post system. So how realistic, I guess, do you think it is for a new party slash platform to make inroads under our current system, with the argument that it's not in the best interests of the incumbent parties, if you want to describe them that way, to modify the system?
Right. So this, we get this question an awful lot, not just in podcasts and interviews, but on the doorstep, and it's a very pertinent one. There's lots of different angles here. The obvious one is to say that, you know, UKIP got its own way without ever, you know, winning elections. They changed the debate. They offered an alternative, and they hijacked the Conservatives. They dragged the Conservatives to their position, quite extreme and unreasonable positions became mainstream, and they were successful by stealth. So that's the first thing. You don't necessarily have to win, you know, 300 or 400 seats in Westminster to change things. Secondly, I mentioned before that Renew's a platform for change. What we've always wanted to do is provide an opportunity for people from outside politics to participate, either as a volunteer, an activist, or mainly as candidates at all levels, you know, local elections, national elections. So if people from outside of politics are able to participate without, at the age of, you know, in the early 20s, picking a team, red or blue, going along, being nice to people, nodding and agreeing and not saying anything controversial until you finally get a seat. And then once you're in that party, doing what you're told forever, regardless of whether you agree with it or it offends your conscience. If we can bring in people, you know, often people mid-career who've just said enough's enough. I can't just watch this silently. I need a way of participating, and there's no chance on earth that I'm going to join the Reds, the Blues, the Yellows, the Greens. You know, I want to do this my way. Renew is there for those people. So it's a bigger idea. We don't come at it with, we are the solution. Here's a big book of policies. Listen to us, and here's the solution to all the UK's problems. We come at it one step back, which is you need different and better people in politics. You need an entirely different approach, because the approach that we have now and that we've had for many years is falling apart at the seams.
Well, that leads me, I guess, to two questions. One is, could you give an example, even brief, as to how you would operationalize that increased participation or that different approach? And then secondly, having such an openness to ideas, does that limit, I guess, the ability to build momentum, for lack of a better word, given that what the description that you made of the other parties means is that because everybody's towing the line, they can very clearly tow in a specific direction. Messaging is very clear. It's all very slick and it's all very organized. So does the benefits of the broader platform become a hindrance in terms of being able to play the political game or engage in the system? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And you're right. We are a grassroots startup organization. There is no real template for what we're doing, and unless you included UKIP, who spent 20 years sort of building their grassroots. So we're learning as we go along, and we're butting up against obstacles. We're finding, you know, the advantages and the drawbacks of being an open platform. We're having to build the road as we drive. So it's not easy at all. To your first question about, you know, the how the reforms might work. One small example of that, which we're discussing and debating at the moment, is the idea of term limits. So it's quite a radical idea. It's not tinkering at the edges. It's reconstituting Westminster in a completely different way. So right now you have people, I think, who are extremely qualified, you know, high caliber people who would never ever dream of becoming a politician or an MP, not least because of the toxic culture of the main parties and the way you have to sort of kowtow to whatever the policy is that day. These people could be brought in if politics was seen as a public service where you take 5, 10, maybe 15 years out of your life, serve your community, and then go back to your career. If this was a route, some of the smartest teachers, educators, the smartest lawyers, publishers, I mean, you name it, people from all walks of life could say, I'm gonna have a go at this. And they'd be able to do it in a far more honest way with real experience in industry, in the health service, in running a small business, you name it. And it would be an extremely radical thing. There would be downsides to it. When we talk about this, people say, oh, but I like my MP. Well, okay, that's fine. But are we saying that at any given time there are only 650 people who are ever good enough at doing this? And the way we recruit those people optimal? And the answer is obviously not. So if you want fresh blood, you want to bring people in, you need to encourage them somehow. And removing the toxicity, the blind loyalty, the whipping, the need to curry favor with often quite extreme people in your local constituency, if you get rid of that, you get better people, and hopefully you don't make bad decisions that divide the country the way we've seen now.
Well, that brings a few things to mind. The first of which being what you've alluded to, where if there were term limits and if the sort of culture of recruitment and careerism was ended, then it would potentially indirectly reduce corruption and other aspects of toxicity in politics that you've sort of mentioned, but not necessarily explicitly stated. It does bring to mind a study that I read a number of years ago, and I can't reference it entirely, but if I find it, I'll put it in the link to the podcast description, was the suggestion that in terms of the effectiveness of elected officials and the decision-making, you could make an argument that if you randomly selected 650 people from the populace, they would make just as good, if not better, decisions than the elected officials. Now, I don't know if that can be generalized to the entire world, but it does suggest, as you said, that there's certainly, if we focus on the most talented people, that we're certainly excluding them from the process. And the final point that it brings to mind is, and I don't bring this party in for any other political reason, but I do remember when many SNP candidates were elected a number of years ago, one of the things that came about was their commenting on the entirely insular nature of being an MP and all of these traditions and history. And in a sense, there was a language, an unspoken coda that you had to understand through your years of being involved in the political process just to function in that sphere that had nothing to do with governance or affecting change or helping people. Is that the type of thing that you're trying to remove?
Yeah. There's people are turned off by the clubbiness, the perceived clubbiness of being an MP. And also, you've seen MPs that have been mired in scandals. You remember perhaps the Peterborough by-election where the MP was in trouble for a very long time, refused point blank to resign or fess up at any level, and had to be forced out by the electorate of Peterborough. Now, this is obscene. In any other walk of life, you'd be summarily fired. But there's something about being an MP that people, you know, cling on for dear life. And again, this does not lead to the recruitment and curation of the best legislators and leaders that the country potentially has. So again, bringing people in from outside of politics has to be part of the solution alongside, you know, electoral reform and many other kinds of reform that are being debated now.
Well, if we go back to the origins of Renew, early coverage of the party / platform was primarily framed in relation to Brexit. So, for example, a 2018 Spectator article was headlined, "A Political Party Trying to Reverse Brexit." But as we come upon our exit from the EU in a few weeks' time, and we're a few years down the road from there, has Renew moved away from those origins, or what are your positions now in our relationship with the EU?
Yeah, this is really important. So, as I mentioned earlier, we didn't start an explicitly anti-Brexit party. That would have been easy. And if we'd done it, we'd have had a completely different name. So the debates that took place over the summer of 2017 with various stakeholders from all groups that were thinking about this, that the conclusion was, if you reverse Brexit tomorrow, all the problems that caused it would still be there. Mm-hmm. And that has not changed one little bit. So this is why we started a party called Renew, which would be all about renewing and reforming the system that caused Brexit to happen. Let's also not forget that the worst things can come down the line. You know, if the system was not able to resist Brexit, it's not fit to resist, you know, far more dangerous forms of nationalism and the undermining of democracy, rule of law, you name it. So our actual DNA is about reforming the system to prevent this sort of thing happening. As it happened, we got dragged into the Brexit maelstrom alongside everybody else, and we got painted fairly or unfairly as, you know, the new anti-Brexit party. What we've done now, but because Brexit has happened, we've been able to revert back to the original idea, which was about reforming the system, while still explicitly saying that we're a pro-European party, and that the departure has been a mistake, and we need to do what we can to limit the damage of that and stay as close to Europe with an arrangement that protects jobs and the future of young people.
Sure, and that I guess, as you said, now that the discussion around whether we will or won't have Brexit has moved on, we can stop sort of painting everybody into one or other side of that debate. Do you have any comment on our current status or the way the negotiations have been handled up till now?
No, I mean, it's chaos, and it's predictable chaos. To your point before, that now that Brexit's done, we don't have to look at things in a leave remain frame forever. I think that's really important. I think if you look at the way people voted in the 2019 election, that remain vote was largely illusory. People ended up being Labour first, remain second, you know, Lib Dems first, remain second, even Conservatives first, remain second. So the inability to harness that vote showed that you need to look forward now. You need to find an inclusive vision that includes hardcore Remainers, mild Remainers, of whom there are, you know, millions, and mild Leavers, regretters, and people who say, well, you know, if we'd done this all over again, we would have done it differently, and people who still think Brexit's a good idea, but understand the system needs to be reformed. So, yeah, you have to look forward, not back.
Well, a lot has been made over the last number of years of that need to reach across the divide, as it were, whether you're talking about people who voted for Brexit or people who are attracted to right-wing extremism. But that rhetoric, in a sense, precludes the actual reasons why a lot of people are taken in, either by the misinformation on Brexit, for example, or extremist views, in the sense that the current economic and social system is leaving them behind. And in the mainstream, politicians are not necessarily acknowledging this aspect, as in the factors that led to that situation. Rather, they're talking about the results of that situation and classifying people as voting for, as you said, Brexit or voting for UKIP or whatever you might be. And as a result, people are able to step into that void with extreme views as long as they acknowledge that there's a problem, even if their solution is entirely snake oil, as it were, whether it's just an extreme position with regard to immigration or whether it's Brexit or whether it's anti-woke culture or whatever it might be. By simply acknowledging the problem, they can get a foothold in the discussion where mainstream political parties can't, because in a sense they seem reluctant to acknowledge the growing inequality that exists. Is the Renew platform, you've already in a sense answered this question a little bit, but do you think that there are specific key things that we have to do that we haven't been doing in a practical sense to bridge the divide beyond a rhetorical discussion?
Yeah, I think that the debate is still very simplified, artificially so, into who, you know, who's a Remainer and who's a Leaver, and all the Leavers voted Leave because they wanted sovereignty and because of the Left Behind, and these sort of easy prescriptive sort of descriptions of how and why people voted the way they did, I find to be completely oversimplified. We've knocked on thousands of doors all over the country. And, you know, let's say if I've spoken to 5,000 or 6,000 leavers, I've had 3,000 or 4,000 different reasons. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a tendency to put people in boxes. And all this talk about the red wall, it's just exhausting. And it doesn't reflect the reality of places like, you know, Mansfield or places like Thanet or it doesn't matter.
Sunderland or Hartlepool or.
Yeah. We forget that in the most leave areas, 3 out of 10 people voted Remain. In London, the capital of Remain, 35 out of 100 people voted leave. So the idea that we are all in this together or ought to be, it's still possible. It's still possible, but we are in a sort of a rebellious moment. We're in a rebellious moment where the idea that a new party or a new way of doing things can break through, I think, is as strong as it's ever been. I think the idea that the electoral reform needs to happen is stronger than it's ever been. And yet there is a sort of a residual sort of British fatalism where people say, oh, no, nothing will ever change. You're wasting your time. And obviously we don't feel that way. If we felt that way, we wouldn't be doing this.
Moving away from Brexit, the assertion from your party that modern politics is broken is really unlikely to be disputed by many people. But opinion does vary on what the best course of action is. In the documentation that I've read, the party has been described itself at times as centrist. And some people feel that in an age of extremism, a centrist or a moderate approach offers a return to civility and a return to normality, and in a sense, going back to where we felt comfortable in terms of the discourse and the action. But critics of centrism argue that by eschewing extremes, you're really painting the goals of, for example, the left and right as if they were the same. But there's a big difference between the goals of, for example, the Extinction Rebellion on the left and BLM, who want to save the environment and address institutional racism, or the likes of the Reclaim Party on the right, who tweet about Marxist social justice warriors and cancel culture and are focused on immigrants and ethnicity. Is the description of your party as, I know I use the word party, but if you'll forgive me that for lack of a better term at the moment, as centrist, accurate? And if it is, how do you counter the claim that centrism isn't a position because it varies based on what the acceptable boundaries of discussion are at any given time?
Yeah, that's a really good one. And we have had that quite a lot, and we've had lots of debates about it. I'm not in love with the idea or the term centrism. It doesn't really make any sense to call anyone who's not extreme a centrist and paint that as a philosophy. If I'm not a Christian and I'm not a Hindu and I'm not a Buddhist and I don't have a God, that doesn't mean I believe in atheism. It just means I happen not to be one of those other things. If I don't believe in Father Christmas, that doesn't make me an anti-Santa. It's something that I happen not to believe in. So not being an extremist doesn't make you a centrist, although the left in particular loves to use this as a derogation to us and others.
Centrist, as a derogatory term.
As though if you're not an extremist, you're worthless, or you're trying to get the best of both worlds, and it's simply not the case. We felt back in 2017, and still do now, that the vast majority of people in the UK are not hysterical, swivel-eyed extremists who think constantly about culture, war, and identity. And they're not. We know that because we knock on the door. Most people are ordinary people who you can talk to and look in the eye and not have some high-tempered debate which you might have that idea if you've ever looked online for the last 5 years. So I think we're wanting a term for non-extremes that isn't quote unquote centrist, but you know, I think that language is letting us down as much as anything with that.
No, I think that's a fair response. And, you know, as much as people would like to dismiss that idea that you have to compromise in order to make practical change, at the end of the day, it comes down to the fact that pragmatism is necessary in any situation, in the same way that even if you were to get into power based entirely on an extreme position, compromise would be necessary in order to effectuate those plans. So the idea that if we equate centrism with a desire to be practical and to compromise and to acknowledge sort of varying positions that, as you said, aren't extreme, then I think it's unfair to use it as a derogatory term. But I will paint my colors to the mast as well, where I feel like it's also used as a badge of sensibility in some cases, people can describe themselves as centrist as a way of sort of describing themselves as being above the fray. And in some cases, we do need extreme solutions to extreme problems. And so negating extremism is I don't think an answer in itself.
No, that's good. I mean, I would even sort of go further, and I wouldn't say that non-extremism is the same as prevarication and compromise. It's an analogy for realism. So if you replace centrist with realist, even pragmatism can be a dirty word sometimes. Pragmatism is perceived as realism. We want to be realists. If a Corbyn government, you know, in a parallel universe, managed to get in, they wouldn't be able to achieve, you know, vast amounts of other stuff that people thought and wanted and believed and fantasized about. If a far right Tommy Robinson group got in, they would also find themselves butting up against reality extremely quickly. So by rejecting extremes, you're rejecting fantasies. So perhaps it's better for us to describe ourselves as realist than centrist. I mean, even the Johnson government is coming up against reality. You know, reality of Brexit, the reality of new intakes of Tory MPs who love joining whatever the most recent research group is to wave their fists and get angry about something to the lowest instincts of their constituencies. So even this sort of mild adoption of populism that Johnson and Cummings have attempted, the limits are being found quite quickly.
And we can only hope that the structures are in place to, as you said, maintain the what has been described in American politics as the guardrails that Trump was able to push beyond. We can only hope that our system can maintain those boundaries to stop, as you said, any extreme positions from actually coming to fruition.
Yeah, exactly. We talked about this in the Renew briefing this week, where the US system, we've heard so much about their vaunted system of checks and balances, that when Trump decided he was not going to leave the White House, these systems of checks and balances appear, you know, touch wood, to be reasserting themselves. And in the UK, we need to test those boundaries too and make sure they work. You know, when the prorogation happened, you know, the system we had here pushed back with some success. But if future populists and nationalists gain traction in UK politics, we need to make sure our system is robust enough to stop them getting carried away and damaging the democracy.
In a discussion that I had recently, the the attempt or the planned attempt to remove the Fixed Term Parliament Act was described as a Trojan horse to actually remove the ability for the courts to comment on parliamentary issues in response to prorogation. Do you have any concerns that that might be a stepping stone towards the type of thing that you were just talking about?
I can't really comment on that. I'm not, that's a little way off my expertise, that one. I'll be honest.
Well, I'm certainly no legal expert, so I think we can comfortably say that we'll leave that aside for a second. I have one final question for you, if it's okay with you, and then I'm happy to hear more about the party generally. I wondered about the economy, because following the financial crisis, governments across Europe, but really especially in the UK, bought into austerity principles, even though by 2012, the former head of the IMF was admitting how damaging they are to economies. However, in the 2020 spending review, we still see things like wage freezes and even MPs saying things like every penny of the national debt has to be repaid, as if they still treat the economy like a household budget. Where does Renew stand with regard to economic policy, and would it be willing to maybe shake up the standard approaches that have held back the country for the last number of years?
Yeah, so difficult, isn't it? When austerity came in, there was a kind of a broad swathe of the electorate who did buy into the idea that it's like a household budget. And then there's across the Atlantic, they said, no, we're going to pump vast amounts into the economy, and it appeared to work better there than here. I believe that is a lesson learned, and the idea that in difficult times with COVID and Brexit, you do need to stimulate the economy, and it has to be done. It needs as much as it needs. You can't put limits on it where people's jobs and livelihoods and futures are at stake. At the same time, you have to be honest. When you pump money into industry and private industry, you need to do it with your eyes open, telling them that this will be paid back by you in taxes. And not promise everything to everyone. When people are on furlough, they need to understand that perhaps income tax will go up. When the likes of Amazon are profiting wildly from online shopping during a crisis, they need to understand that their a bigger chunk of their income has to pay to fix the problems that benefited them during this crisis. So I think as long as you're honest, the more spending happens now, the more it will need to be recouped, and don't pretend otherwise. I think that's a fair position to take.
Thank you. Well, I'd like to end by, I guess, in a sense, giving you a chance to articulate your vision for the party and describe how anybody listening, if they wanted to get involved, might get involved, and anything else that you'd like to tell our listeners about the platform and its vision for the future.
Thanks. So I guess I always go back to the origins. So Renew started with a handful of people who said, enough's enough. Whatever happens next in politics, I'm going to get involved somehow. I can't be a passenger. So myself and a few other people stood as pro-European independents in that election, with little or no support, little or no budget, and little or no hope of winning a seat. And we found out about one another's campaigns and got together to get a little bit of publicity. Then we found a gentleman who would give us some startup cash to get a website going and get registered with the Electoral Commission, and a party was born. Now, we thought that if there was just a handful of people in each neighborhood who, like us, would just stand up and say, look, I'm going to stand and be counted here. I'm not going to suffer any more of this without having my say. If there were enough people like that who were reasonable people, the right people doing the right things for the right reasons, who were, you know, a little bit selfless, perhaps a little bit optimistic, perhaps a little bit crazily optimistic. If every neighborhood has one or two of those people, don't you have enough to make a real reformist party? I think you do. So when we launched, we had a very prominent page on the website saying become a candidate. And within, we had 300 candidate applications by Christmas. We had our official launch in the February of 2018, and the number of applications crashed the system. It was over 1,000. Yeah. So we knew we were onto something. However, the Brexit wars that we've discussed also interfered with our ability to recruit, and you know, people were going back to Labour because it was too important, or going back to the Conservatives because it was too important to keep Corbyn out, and it's made things more difficult for us. But we feel we're persistent. We feel we're tenacious. We're still recruiting people. We're recruiting more and better people. And once we get our message out there in earnest, and once people understand that a real change can occur in 2024 or before, we hope we can build and build. So to the point of how can you get involved, there's lots and lots and lots of ways. I mean, just on our website, www.renewparty.org.uk, you can sign up to the mailing list. That's our Friday briefing. You can become a friend of Renew, which is someone who wants to help us out and follow us, but perhaps might be a member of another party. You can become a full member, either on an annual or a monthly basis. You can apply to become a regional coordinator or a spokesperson. We have spokespeople on various industries and topics of expertise. We have regional coordinators who G up activity in their neighborhoods. And you can also apply to be a candidate if you have political ambitions. There are an awful lot of by-elections in local councils throughout the year. And anyone who wants to stand in a fairly limited way, it's not a massive task to stand as a local councillor. We can support you in your first steps of getting involved in politics or, you know, civic participation. We have a blog page under the news tab of our website where people write articles. It's not explicitly setting out Renew policy. It's just thoughts and ideas about ideas close to your heart. And of course, we have the standard, Twitter and Instagram and Facebook pages where people can follow us. We have regular Zoom meetings. Before COVID, we had regular meetups around the country. And we try and be as open as possible to anyone who wants to come. What we're looking for is people interested in participation, openness, and reform. If your article or your heart lies somewhere in those three boxes, then we'd like to hear from you.
Thank you so much, James, for speaking to me. It's been a fascinating discussion. I'll leave the links that you described in the episode description because I think at a basic level, the participation in politics and the potential to disrupt the current monopoly is a absolutely laudable and necessary goal. So the ability for anybody to engage in the political process is one to be really encouraged. So we'll certainly be doing that. I hope that in the future, we'll get a chance to speak to you sometime down the road. We'll be keeping an eye on the progress of Renew. So either maybe yourself or one of the potential candidates in the future, if we can. if that would be okay with you.
You should talk to our deputy leader, Carla Burns, who works at the NHS, and you could have a fascinating conversation with her about not only Brexit in Merseyside, but also COVID and any number of topics. So yeah, that would be
well, we will do that for the future. Yeah, thank you for that. So again, thank you so much for joining me, James, and take care.
Thanks, Chris.